1, 2, 3. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the October edition of the Skewed and Reviewed Skewedcast. I am Gareth, creator of Skewed and Reviewed, as well as Skewed and Reviewed the magazine, and you can catch us on the BJ Shea's Morning Experience and BJ Shea's Geek Nation on KISW-FM radio out of Seattle. And you can hear it online at KISW.com or download it through iTunes. You can also catch us each week in the Maricopa Monitor, as well as our monthly Skewedcast. And with me, as always, is Joseph from our Seattle office and Justin from the Arizona office. And we've got a very special Halloween show for you today. We're going to talk about one piece of hardware. We're going to talk about an upcoming horror film that is making its way around in a few theaters, and then we've got big news on the Marvel films that were announced, as well as a look at three horror-related games and some interesting stuff. Now, obviously, guys, we're going to put this out on Halloween, and one of the things that I wanted to mention is a little trick that I decided to help the kids out. You know, believe it or not, we're all about helping the kids out and helping people better their lives at Skewed and Reviewed. And we all remember trick-or-treating and coming home with our bags, boxes, pillowcases, whatever, full of candy. And mom, dad, grandparents, whomever, you had to put the stuff out for inspection, right? You remember that?
Yep.
And you had to, yep, had to make sure nobody had tainted with it or anything like that. And we're not going to get into the concerns about the Colorado and Washington pot-tainted candy and all of that. Now, I used to do that for my sisters when I got to that age where I was too old to trick-or-treat, but, you know, still wanted to be a part of the ongoing process. So one of the tricks that I used to do is put their candy out, and I looked at it as an educational experience. I would take one-third of it and say, this is how taxes work, thank you very much. And I figured if they cried, it's better they learn now with candy before it comes out of their paycheck. And the great thing about it is you can pick and choose and go, you know what, I think we have an audit here, so I'll take that Snickers. And you start going for the brand name stuff and the larger size pieces. Now, eventually you'd give it back, but you'd take one or two for your trouble. And, you know, that's just how things worked. So, you know, good stuff there. So, looking at Halloween here, interesting film here. We, you know, briefly talked about it. And it's from the creator of the Blair Witch Project, Eduardo Sanchez. And it's a film called Exist. Now, Eduardo has done a few films, some and TV. Some of them have been in the found footage vein, and others haven't. And essentially what he did with this one, he goes to the standard tried and true formula of a cast of, you know, let's be honest, pretty much unknowns, and they're out on a effort to find Bigfoot. Now, of course, things do not go as planned, and of course, with Bigfoot, you know, they operate under the premise of, well, there's never been a confirmed case of a Bigfoot attack despite roughly over 3,000 reported sightings in the U.S. So their mentality is, you know, we'll just go at it and it'll be a very mellow thing here, and we'll go into the woods in a cabin in the woods, which never leads well in any of these genre films, and someone ends up pissing it off, and all hell breaks loose. Now, gotta say, I was, you know, rooting for Bigfoot. So it's like, you know, get him, you know. Yes. But the interesting thing about it is it's coming from Lionsgate. It has been, you know, it debuted at South by Southwest, and it is starting to make its way out. Lionsgate is doing the distribution on it. And, you know, officially, October 24th, it had some theatrical things. You're going to start seeing it on demand and probably Netflix streaming and stuff in the future. Like a lot of these found footage films, entertaining. You know, don't know if I'd spend $10 to go see it in the theater, but had a good time watching it.
You know, this is interesting because I wasn't a huge fan of Blair Witch, and it's not just that it was a found footage thing, but just wasn't a fan. But I am a fan of some of the episodes of Intruders that the director has done, and so I'm interested to see how he does with this one.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one. I'll see if we can get a review set up for you as well so you can watch it. As you know, I think I've discussed a few times, horror in our household is a very interesting topic because I watch it, things don't scare me, and we'll be discussing that more when we get to the games. But my wife has a very kind of hardened rule. Like, for example, she can tolerate. She won't go out of her way to watch it, but if it's on in the background, she might. She'll watch The Walking Dead, no problem. Loves that. Things like, what's a good way to put it? The hack and slash films. Doesn't really have interest in them, but, you know, who hasn't seen one or two of them at a time? The one where she draws the line are the demonic possession films. Like, you know, The Exorcism of Emily Rose, the Paranormal Activities, Conjuring, all those are out. And I asked her about that, and I said, well, what's your problem with this? She said, I find it much more likely that a demonic possession thing could happen, so therefore it's just kind of upsetting. And so, you know, that's kind
that's
of the running... Yeah, it's kind of the running joke that whenever these things come out, it's like, you know, I remember one particular film with Ethan Hawke that had pretty creepy trailer, and we were at a film, and she's like, you know what, I don't even want to see the trailer. That's how much it's bugging me.
Oh, what was that one?
You know,
is that
the
one where he's the writer?
Yeah, and there was the projector and everything, and I just kept saying, you know, the whole time I'm like, that's awesome. Oh, that's amazing. And she's
oh,
like,
oh, I love that film. That was actually, it was the first film in 10 years that made me jump.
Yeah.
And it was the part with the lawnmower. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about.
I haven't seen it yet. No, but it's on. It's
oh.
And here's the thing, like, our Netflix queue, they're sitting there. Paranormal Activities, they're all like, it's like, she's like, hey, feel free to watch anytime. Now, in the recent days, I just finally got around to seeing You're Next. I saw that yesterday and thought, hey, you know what, that's not really bad. And then I saw one before that that was bad called Stage Fright. And it kind of lured me in because it offered Minnie Driver and Meatloaf. And I thought, you know, if you can get Minnie Driver in a film, you've got to have some kind of quality to it. And she gets taken out like in the first 2 minutes.
No.
And I'm thinking, okay. So there must have been a pretty nice check or a favor to someone for her to agree to do this. And, you know, and they're like musical numbers. And I'm like, with Meatloaf. And I'm like, all right, why not? So... Yeah, Horror 2014, huh? Now, real quick, before I forget, I do want to mention the piece of hardware we wanted to review, and this is the IK Multimedia iRig Pro Instrument Microphone Interface with MIDI for the iOS and the Mac. And simply put, it's a device roughly the size of an iPod, and what you do... is you can plug your instruments into it to give you MIDI input for simultaneous audio and MIDI recording. And it's got an adjustable gain control for ideal sound with any instrument type. So you want to plug in a keyboard, you want to plug in a guitar, all of that's possible. It has lighting, 30-pin, and USB cables for compatibility with all generations of the iPhone, works with the iPads and the Mac. And that's a very interesting thing. And the great thing about it is, you know, it's... officially it retails for $150, but you can find it in the $90 to $100 range, give or take, at most outlets. So if you're a musician, if you're a musician who is a type of magician and you want to make music or just tinker around, it is definitely definitely something that you will want to look into. So check that out. I think it's going to be a very interesting one. All right, guys, now's the time for the big one. Do we want to let's talk about the games. Let's talk about the games. Now, one I powered through. Joseph, you haven't played a lot of it, but I know, Justin, you have. Let's talk about Borderlands, the pre-sequels, the good, the bad, and the in-between. So, Joseph, you start. Leads.
Well, you know, the most experience that I've had with this game so far is... at PAX, but we had, a good 10 minutes of playing time or so.
Easily.
And, you know, it was fun, and it brought some new elements to the game, and I had a lot of fun with it, especially the whole gravity thing and being within the spheres, only certain weapons having to work in the climate, not the climate control, but the atmosphere, and some that don't work, and things like that. You know, I had a lot of fun with it. Again, not too much experience, but I do look forward to playing this on the PC pretty soon.
Yeah, no, Justin, what do you have to say?
Well,
about
I mean,
it?
I like it a lot just because, you know, I'm a Borderlands fan. I like the first one, the second one, but the one thing that I would criticize it for is that I think it feels smaller than the second game. It doesn't really feel like a full game, and I think, you know, you can kind of tell that these guys. Like, they're good developers, they're very talented, but when Gearbox got around to making the second game. The second game was such a massive jump from the first. Gearbox, they got it. Like, they got it down pat. And when they made the second game, it was a full, complete, and it was a great... it was basically what their vision was. And I think this game, you can kind of tell they're still getting their footing. Like, the level design is not as good. A lot of the writing is, you know, it's hit or miss. Like, it's got some great funny moments, but it's also got some kind of weaker moments. And I think overall, to me, it feels more like an expansion, like what you'd get back in the day for like a $30 or $40 an expansion to a game.
You know, yeah, it's funny that you mentioned that, Justin, because I remember when they first announced the game, I thought it was an expansion to Borderlands 2. Like, just based on the title and a few other things, and hearing what you had to say about it with the content and everything, I almost wondered if they should have just released it as an expansion.
Yeah, and, you know, the interesting thing about that is, of course, we never know the privy to the backroom conversation stuff that go on. But I remember, you know, from my memory, the chronology of the game was essentially 2K, Gearbox had come out and essentially said, it's going to be a bit until you see a Borderlands 3. And they had released four download pack episodes for Borderlands 2. And then they had announced, and you guys remember this, that we played this at PAX the prior year, the Halloween one where you had to fight the giant pumpkin and all of that stuff.
Yes.
That was the fifth one. And they had said, essentially, they were making new content, but they did not want to commit to selling a season pass because that would lock them into saying, well, you got to give us at least three more or four more in the next year. Well, you know, if you browse online, there were some other holiday-themed content packs that came available. But, you know, as you said, all eyes were on Gearbox and what was going on. And, yes, we know that they are still stinging a bit from the whole Aliens Colonial Marine incident. And lo and behold, we get 2K Australia comes out with this new game. And while it's a bit longer than some of the DLC... I mean, I think that's very evident. It is longer than some of the DLC. It is shorter than the previous games in the series. And for me, you know, graphically it's the same. I know they have their look that they have to do, but there were things that you could tell. Like, for example, it was very obvious they were using Australian actors throughout the thing. And there were little things that found they were kind of weird. Like, I remember one getting on an elevator, and Jack comes on, and he just walks right past me, and he walks through the wall, and he's sitting in the wall talking to me, and then he pops out of the wall. And then there were some times, like, I would take on a boss solo, because I played probably about half the game solo before completing it, you know, through the very good matchmaking system where people could drop in and out. And there were times where I would have one or two of the big bosses left, not the uber bosses, but, you know, a big boss, and he'd take me out near the spawning station. Well, lo and behold, I spawn, and there he is right there. And, you know, you literally, the moment you spawned, you were forced to break into a sprint and try to get past him. And I remember a couple of times where there was, like, a ledge to my right, and there was a tiny doorway to the left, and he was basically blocking it, so it made things really interesting. I had to try to, you know, hit him with a grenade and hope he reacted to that and then run. And so, you know, while minor, it did kind of, you know, get on my nerves. But that being said, I love seeing the old characters from the previous games. I love the jokes. I don't know if, you know, this isn't spoilerific, but Tiny Tina making reference to the group playing the Dungeons & Dragons-themed game from the DLC, I thought was a nice touch. You know, the massive range of weaponry is always good. And, you know, the new vehicles. So I definitely enjoyed it, but it did whet my appetite for wanting a full game, or at the very least, a lot of further expansion for the series.
Well, and you know what else is interesting is the mod community. I mean, this game's only been out for a couple of weeks, and they have, I don't know if you've seen it, but they have that standalone mod to make it a third-person shooter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, I have seen that.
It kind of makes me wonder if some of these companies should be paying attention to these mods and maybe incorporating something similar into your games, because to me personally, I'm better with third person than I am with first person, and once I get the game, I probably will check out that mod, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I now, you know, we mentioned this earlier. I loved the zero gravity or the low gravity, and I love that because it allowed new combat things. I loved being able to take long jumps. I loved being able to shoot people from above. So, you know, definitely a plus all around. But anyway, let's move on to the next game, and that would be The Evil Within. And I remember, Joseph, you've definitely had a nice little run-in with that, and you're getting ready for some more attention to it soon. But why don't you give us your initial impressions of it?
So I had the opportunity to play this one in PAX this year, and it was a very interesting game, and it was tense, and I could feel myself tensing up the whole time watching it, and I don't know if it was per se because of the content of the game, waiting for something to jump out at me, or the fact that I was in this loud hall and I was expecting noises, but I had these really great noise-canceling headphones on, so I couldn't hear anything, and if it was the anticipation of something coming that was making me tense, or the game itself. That said, I had a great experience with it, but I don't think I would have enjoyed my experience if I hadn't experienced it in any other environment. Like, if I had just played it at home for the first time, I'm not sure I would have liked the game as much as I did. Mm-hmm. I'm very much into the stealth, the puzzle solving, all of the aspects that this game pulls in. And you know, sometimes, like, I even enjoy those weird movies that just make you go, what the, like, what just happened? And there was a lot of that in the chapter that I got to play with this game. And so I'm really looking forward to spending more time with it.
Yeah, and see, the great thing about it is that I remembered, you know, those Turtle Beach headphones were amazing. And if you remember, I actually had one of the cups slightly off one of my ears so I could hear around me, because the developers would be standing there trying to offer us, you know, tips and hints. And it's like, huh? And, you know, unlike you, I had actually played it before at E3, so that was my second time playing it, and I was still, you know, not doing too well. And, you know, the interesting thing about it is playing the full game, my big thing is having to get used to the weaponry, because I'm still used to, as I talked to you guys before, I'm, you know, you put me in Hitman, you put me in a stealth thing, I'll line the bodies up in a row and encourage people to come and just take them out and see how many I can pile up. Hiding in the shadows, sneaking around, you know, Joseph, you love doing that with Splinter Cell and all that. I like a straight-up fight with body count. And, you know, there were a couple of times, like I can remember one level early on, you come into this field and here's some bad guys. And so you have to run past them, you run into this place, but you have to be careful that you don't bump a booby trap and cut yourself in half. You go in, you get the bullets, you go out and you run, and then all of a sudden there's four of those guys around you. So you can decide to go, you know, fight against them or evade them. And it does take a couple of headshots to bring them down, because your melee only knocks them down. And at this point, my only weapon was essentially a gun with, you know, 6 to 8 shots in it. Well, you know, one thing leads to another. You get through it, you think you're done, and now all of a sudden a surprise comes up, you bite it, and guess what? You have to go through and complete the whole level again. And, you know, as somebody that's used to the old days of literally save early, save often, there are times where the checkpoint save gets to be crazy. That being said, the immersive quality to it and the visuals were amazing. Like, early on, this scene in a, without trying to give anything away, combining a slaughterhouse with a water slide and having to literally slide through the blood, guts, and gore while evading blades was epic. And then the intensity of having somebody, even going through all that, there was still someone after you, and hiding in lockers and trying to avoid them. It's like, yeah, it forced you out of your comfort zone, where you can't just stand down with guns blazing and see who drops. You have to outthink them, and there you go. Justin, what do you have on it?
I actually haven't had a chance to play it yet. It's in my queue of stuff to play. It's in my library, but I've been mainly focusing on pre-sequel and, well, the other game we're about to talk about. But it's definitely one I'm looking forward to. Otherwise, I wouldn't have bought it, but it's one I'm going to probably be playing next.
And, you know, we mentioned how Jen's not into the scary stuff, my wife, but she, you know, there were a few times she was, like, looking over from the kitchen going, huh, that's the one from PAX. Because you remember at PAX, she was the one just standing there asking the questions while we were playing. Yeah. She wouldn't have it. And I'm like, so my grand plan is to accidentally leave a controller in front of her with the game on and see what happens. So you know, we'll see. Because she, you know, she always surprises me. There, you know, she likes those casual games like Plants vs. Zombie and Kitchen Scramble and all of that. And then out of the blue, she'll play something like Left 4 Dead. And, you know, it's the funny thing about it. You just never know. You know, you're like, oh, okay, she's playing Disney Infinity. That makes sense. She's playing that. And then the next minute, she's like, do you have any of the old Call of Duties? And do I have to start all the way at the beginning, or can I just pick up any of the others? And it's like, you can have whichever one you want to play, hon. So, interesting enough. All right, Justin. So bring us to the one that, let me preface this one here. As I mentioned earlier, I don't scare. The only, you know, I can go through haunted houses, I can see horror films, they don't get to me. Now, two games did make me extremely uncomfortable, and that was Dead Space and Dead Space 2. Haven't had any moments in Dead Space 3 that really put me off too much, kind of because I knew what to expect. But, you know, those at least had the element of, I know there's something down that corridor, I don't know where it is, but I know it's coming. I don't want to go down there, but boy, to complete this mission, I'm going to have to. So here you go. And there was a lot of cursing during that game, because especially Dead Space 2 had a pretty difficult challenge level to it. But, you know, finishing it was also one of the greatest things. And that's kind of where we are with the new game, Alien Isolation. So, Justin, why don't you take this
one? So, yeah, it's actually probably maybe my favorite game so far this year. And I might be a little biased just because I come from a AVP fan site. AVP2 is still one of my favorite games ever made, and the movies are some of my favorite movies ever made, too. So going into it, you know, I kind of had a pretty high bar just because, you know, I'm a fan. And I think I didn't know what to really expect just because of Colonial Marines was still fresh in my mind. And I think that is the case for most people, but they knocked it out of the park with this one. And, you know, I'm actually kind of, I'm similar to you. Like, I don't scare very easily. I used to. You know, Dead Space did put me, like, that was a very stressful game. Dead Space 2 also. You know, old Silent Hill and everything. But I don't scare nearly as easy as I used to. And I kind of really wish I did, just because you get more emotionally involved. And this game,
I was going to say, let's also not forget The Last of Us. There were some, while not overly scary, there were some edgy moments in The Last of Us, especially with the remastered edition.
Right.
But
And this game, you know, I've been shooting aliens with a pulse rifle for a long time. I still occasionally turn AVP2 on and play it. And so, by all accounts, the alien should not be a scary thing for me, just because it's been an enemy I've dealt with so many times, but even this game is masters its horror, because, and I think it's very interesting as a video game the way it's designed, because most video games have to be very action oriented and very very fast paced, because they have to keep your entertainment. They're kind of like blockbusters; they have to keep your attention. And this game is very slow. It's very methodical. It's very like you really have to sneak around, because one, you don't know. It does a very good job giving you as little information as possible, because you really don't know how the alien will react. You don't know how different AI will react, so you don't really know what you can get away with. It'll give you, like, a gun or a shotgun or something, and you really don't know how effective it will be. So most of the game, I actually never even used it.
And let's not forget, they're also very good at limiting your ammunition
exactly.
as well.
And, you know, it makes it so every time you're going through the game and you're sneaking around, you get that really tense, heart-pounding feeling of, like, am I going to get to the next save point? Because it doesn't save for you.
No. And, you know, we have the video up online if anybody wants to laugh about me after I found the Magnum early in the game and got a few bullets and thought I knew from my experiences at PAX and E3 that you can't kill the alien. I mean, I first time I played it at E3, the sucker charged me in survival mode with, like, just barely seconds out of the room. I gave it a full blast of flame to the face and it took off, and the developer was there and he was like, hey, good job. Well, then the thing analyzed, adapted, and came back and finished me off. So I knew, but, you know, I got a couple of androids with the with the EMP grenade and a few well-placed magnum shots, because you can't always land the wrench. Their reflexes are quite fast. And went to go take another one, thinking, yeah, I've got this. I've taken two down. I'm going to take the more. I got one shot away, and then all of a sudden, the worst sound you could hear in game, click, short of the alien hiss, click, 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 click. It came at me. I tried to hide in a locker, and he and a buddy just pulled open the locker door, pulled me out, and pimp slapped me up and down one side to the other. And I'm like, yeah. And of course, as you're running away, the whole time you're going, I wonder when Sparky's going to drop from a vent and finish me off. So, yeah. And that's the great thing about non-scripted games, where it does react. I mean, the first time I had to hack a door, right after the thing had made an appearance, I was terrified, because I was like, you know, if I don't do this thing correct the first time, is that thing going to be standing right over my shoulder? And, you know, to quote Hudson, game over, man. So, yeah. Now, Joseph, you had an interesting run on it with at PAX. You want to discuss that one real quick?
Yeah, and I think, kind of like with the Evil Within, I don't know if I would have given this game a second glance if I hadn't experienced it at PAX, and it's most at PAX Prime this year, and it's mostly because of, you know, the incredible flop that Colonial Marines was. You know, the Aliens games kind of just fell off my radar because of that, which is unfortunate, but I'm glad I got to experience it there. Now, at PAX, they had set up two different environments. One looked like an egg.
Yes.
And you would get inside, and you were completely shut off from the outside environment.
It's very fun if people had claustrophobia. I don't think that that's – but, yeah, it was still creepy in there.
Yeah, and then you get in, and you're playing the game. And it adds just such a uniqueness to the experience, and it's what made me purchase the game. Actually, I purchased it this morning. I just haven't had a chance to play it yet.
Good luck.
it's what really pulled me towards it, because it's such an – I don't know if it's fresh, but it feels like a fresh concept, because it's different than what else is out there right now, and I think that's what really attracted me to it. But it was nerve-wracking inside that egg, trying to, you know, do what you need to do to survive.
And the good thing, too, is they also announced all the DLC, so it's obvious in the survival modes they are going to continue this moving forward.
Yeah, and it really makes me... You know, we've talked about it before, about the lady who played the game through the Oculus Rift.
Yeah.
And how, what was it, like within a minute, she just pulled it
off.
A
couple minutes,
like,
yeah.
Nope, I'm done.
Yeah, well, it was the survival mode where the thing is designed to come at you very early in the thing. But yeah, she didn't do very well.
Having not experienced the Oculus Rift yet myself, that is a game that I would love to try on there. And I would love it to be my first one. Because it...
Definitely.
It would give you a very unique experience into what the Oculus Rift can do, and if that's that impressive, this thing's gonna take off. But
and they had mentioned how when I asked them at E3, I asked about the, I know they don't have a release date yet, but I asked them about the VR device for the Sony for the people that have the PS4 version, and you know, while not confirming it, they said that's definitely something that's on their radar. And of course, I think it was, you know, this could be through a patch or an update. These things are not out of the realm. Now, of course, by the time that thing comes to market, the game could be kind of old news. But at least, you know, if they're looking long-term with sequels and other aspects of that, you know, it'll be very interesting to do. Also, I've got to mention here, by this time next week, we're going to be plowing away on Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. And you know, the interesting thing about it is some of the advanced reviews, and that's what I always love. We're in the priority review queue, but not the advanced review queue. So it always comes on a Tuesday, and you know, when it's released, and they have very interesting ways of sending it over. Because sometimes I remember one time a couple of years ago, it didn't show up till about 2:33 in the afternoon, which is nice. Except I had a bunch of errands I had to do that day. And, you know, so by the time I had to run home, stick it in Steam, and so it could download, and by, you know, that day one, everyone's on it. And my wife gets in, she's like, all right, honey, we got a screening tonight, we got dinner, and I'm like, one multiplayer match. And she said, you know, I remember she went on Facebook and said, well, it must be a new Call of Duty, because he's giggling like a schoolboy up there, and all I hear is numbs being counted off, so.
Well, hey, like, Gareth.
Yeah.
too, if you run into the same situation again this year, Steam has a new thing that you can remote install apps. So if you're not home, or software and games and stuff. So if you're not home, you can install the Steam app on your phone, enter the code to claim it, and remotely install it onto your computer while you're out doing your errands. So it's ready for you to go when you get home.
See, and that's very helpful. The big thing with that is, as long as you remember to leave your computer on, you're set. And that
right?
That is a game changer. I mean, that will help considerably. So thank you. I will definitely look into that. And we got to discuss the big movie stuff. I know we could discuss these games forever, especially things that would be fun for Halloween and that sort of thing. But Marvel unleashed a lot of information. And, while it's not to the same level, then we had Entertainment Weekly discuss the new Terminator film, including the, I hope they're kidding, not-so-innocent Sarah Connor, who lives with a older Terminator, Schwarzenegger, who she refers to as Pops. And I think the idea is that the timeline got horribly skewed. But, I'll give it a wait and see, even with a PG-13 rating. But let's talk about the Marvel movie. They dropped down a hammer. And, of course, here we are a day later, and we've got some really interesting stuff. Like, for example, Captain Marvel. Now, they're going with the female Captain Marvel, and, it's kind of interesting because I remember, the DC Captain Marvel, who we all Shazam, whatever. Very interesting choice because it's their first, real female lead character. Apologies to Black Widow. I'm saying the first time they've said, this is the female character that's going to carry a film franchise.
Oh, absolutely.
And they had mentioned how because of this, it looks like the long-rumored Black Widow movie is on hold. And, let's be honest. You got to look beyond the stuff here. It could be very simple. We forget that Scarlett's had a baby, so maybe she just simply has said, my plate's going to be full with appearances in Captain America and an Avengers film. Maybe I'm not quite up for doing a standalone film at this
time. That, and I think, Captain Marvel, if you're really big into comics, she's not maybe as well known. She's probably hovers maybe a little bit above Guardians of the Galaxy. But in comics, that's a pretty big female hero. So I think it is a good choice.
Yeah, and and you look at these things here, we knew about Doctor Strange. The only question was going to be who was playing him, because they even mentioned it in the last Captain America movie. But, Black Panther, there's an interesting choice in Chadwick Boseman, who was he's going to be seen in the next Captain America movie first, is what CNN's reporting, and then they're going to spin him off into his own film. And see, another prime example of Marvel doing the right thing. There are certain characters they can say, here you go, watch them, and we're going to learn about them together. And then there are others they say, we're going to give you an introduction to them into something that's already been established. Then we're going to transition them. They're just setting them up for success. Especially a character like this, it's so easier to show him interacting with the Captain America and the other characters, and so people could say, got it. So it builds up excitement, and it makes it a little less, boy, do I need to take a chance on this, because, let's be honest. Right now, Marvel could pretty much put out anything, and I'm curious, this weekend we see Big Hero 6, which is technically a Marvel animated film. So it'll be interesting to see how, if more people associate that with Marvel or associate that with the Disney side of things. So, very, very, very interesting. And then, let's talk about the Inhumans. This is one that, honestly, I knew more about Guardians of the Galaxy than the Inhumans. I kind of grew up in the age of, I grew up reading Spider-Man, and, I pretty much read comics into the 80s and a little bit in the 90s. And then, to be honest, as we've talked about in the past, when they rebooted various storylines, as they're apt to do, I guess a good way for me would be when Stan Lee kind of stepped away from things was about the time that I didn't stopped reading a lot of them. And, part of that had to be at a time living overseas when it was not as easy to get a hold of them. But, I kind of have what I consider my classic era of the characters from the old ones I read from the 70s onwards up through the, stuff I remember in the 80s and early 90s. But don't know much about the Inhumans, but from what I understand is they are essentially another dysfunctional race of a group of superheroes together to save the world.
Yeah, and I think that there's going to be plenty of time between now and the release of that movie for people to become familiar with them, because we're talking, what, 2018 for the Inhumans?
Right. Yeah.
But I was on the same page as you. Like, I was looking through the list of the movies, and I saw the Inhumans, and I was like, huh? And so I've done a little bit of research on them already, and I recognize no name of the group. So, you know, my plan is to get onto Comixology here pretty soon, or head up to my local comic store and buy the comics and get familiar with them.
Yeah,
which
exactly.
I think is going to happen with a majority of the people who have become fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, exactly. And see, and that's the thing about it. And as we talked in the past too, one of the interesting things is they are. How do we put it? If they, you know, they're moving from two films a year to three films a year on some of these things. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that all, you know, rolls out, because they certainly are not feeling any pressure, as it were. They're definitely going to be lining these things up and doing it. So, and, you know, and Thor Ragnarok, I remember you had said you're extremely excited about that.
Absolutely.
From what we understand, Loki is definitely coming back. I think they're smart not to even consider a Thor movie without Loki.
Of course.
And, you know, you got the Captain America Civil War, where Robert Downey Jr. is getting a huge paycheck. I hear $50 million plus profit sharing to appear in this thing. And, you know, and then you got Avengers Infinity War, which is great because there's two parts to this. And they moved up Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, so... There you
well,
go.
And what'll be interesting too is they had the release trailer or a teaser thing for the Infinity War, and which I thought was great that they put that out there, because for me, to be honest, I didn't realize that they were considered the Ether as one of the Power Stones or one of the Infinity Stones, and I knew the Tesseract was considered one, and then obviously we have the core concept of Guardians of the Galaxy revolved around one of them, and I didn't realize they considered it Ether, but it all is building up to this final big battle with Thanos, you know. And there was a comment that I read, and I couldn't agree with it more, but you're going to see, I think in the first Infinity War movie, you're going to see it's going to end on a dour note. Our, you know, our new Avengers team, whoever it may be at the time, because there's talks about us losing one at the end of the next Avengers, or
right.
And, you know, it could be any of them, because even the trailer has set that up perfectly that you don't know, and it could be any of them. But to see them down, and then I think, and I'm hoping that in the second Infinity War, we're going to see both groups. Like, you're going to see this big, I mean, everybody's going to be there. And,
there's two interesting notes. If you kind of follow the two comic or just the Civil War comic storyline that they did a few years ago, it was Captain America that died in that. Full spoilers, by the way, but this was several years ago.
thanks for ruining it.
It was Captain America who died, but I think also Thor died, and I think because. This is something I looked up because I didn't know anything about Ragnarok. I thought it may have been a comic event, but I looked it up last night, and apparently Ragnarok is a character, and Ragnarok is a cyborg clone of Thor that just went nuts and just started, you know, went on a rampage, and then Thor had to come back and fight him. So there's something kind of interesting there. Is it Captain America who's going to die in the Civil War movie, or is Thor going to die, or, you know, they can really just pull a lot of, like, curveballs here and, like, kind of change up everything.
And remember, nobody dies and stays dead. I mean, like, for example, I mean, just spitballing here, it'd be really interesting to kill off a couple people in the first part of the film, and then everybody has to wait a year, and if they could somehow keep it under wraps as to who is and who isn't in the film... That way you wonder, you know, hey, are these guys really going to be alive? See, my guess is if they're smart, what I would do is I'd film the two movies back to back. That way there's no nonsense about, well, you know, Chris Evans was on set, so therefore he's obviously alive. And that way they could say, well, maybe not. Maybe, you know, what part was Chris filming? Because we all know these movies are never filmed right. in sequence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would be a very interesting thing, is to shoot it, break, and then literally have people going, who's coming back? And until you see the next trailer, because you remember the last Captain America film, there was the old, you saw him over a coffin, but it was like, who died?
Right.
And someone died, but as we know, nobody stays dead in the Marvel Universe long.
Yeah, and the same thing could be said of the Age of Ultron trailer. I mean, you've got several different things alluding to characters leaving. You know, Captain America's broken shield, Thor dropping his hammer, Bruce Banner just sitting looking broken and disheveled while the other Avengers stand around him, and even the introduction of the Hulkbuster that could lead into a standalone movie about Planet Hulk, or even possibly include Bruce Banner and the Hulk in the next Guardians of the Galaxy movie. I think we're going to see a lot of very important storylines put into motion with Age of Ultron, and it'll be interesting to see after that. I'd be interested in doing even a special version of our podcast to discuss the movie.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we definitely will be doing that. And, you know, the other thing, too, is what I love is how, on one hand, you could say, hey, guys, they're not going to kill the cash cow. They've already announced Captain America. We know that Iron Man's in it, too. We know they've already announced a Thor film. They're going to survive Ultron. They're surviving, and then there's surviving. Are they going to be the same people that come out of this thing?
And, you know, it's with Tony Stark already changed from the events in the first Avengers, I'm willing to bet it's not be him, but you never can tell in the Marvel Universe.
Exactly. And see that, and like we said, nobody stays dead forever. But hey, guys, we got a lot to look forward to, and that's for sure. And, you know, in the future, I think maybe next month we'll also discuss the DC films, and, you know, they've not had the fanfare because there's been some questionable choices, some, you know, real head scratchers about casting and all of that. But, you know, definitely stuff to look forward to.
You know, what's funny is I think DC is winning in the television world versus Marvel winning in the cinematic world.
I can definitely say that Gotham has picked up considerably in the last couple of weeks. So
that and Arrow and Flash are doing tremendously well on the CW network, too.
I like Flash. I haven't really gotten into Arrow as much, but I'm going to because I know it's good. My only problem with this version of the Flash is that I like that they took John Wesley Shipp, the previous TV's Flash, as his father.
I love that, yeah.
My problem is the kid is too young. I look at him and I say, there is just no way this guy could be a forensic scientist at his age. It just wouldn't happen.
You know, you'd be surprised. He's older than he looks, and I think that's the problem, is his looks are too young. But, you know, I think he's in his, early 20s, 24, somewhere around there, and that's perfectly feasible for that occupation.
Which is true. So, guys, anything else we need to cover?
I think that's about it.
Yeah, hey, just have a safe Halloween out there, everybody.
Thank you very much.